Today in our hot seat, we have Mark Lawyer, General Manager of Trados. Hi, Mark. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. Good to be here.
Happy to have you here, Mark. And are you ready? Shall we do this?
We should do this, Inga. Yes. Let's do it.
Welcome to C-Suite Hot Seat, the show where we put C-level executives from language service providers of all sizes in the hot seat. We will ask tough questions and get inspired answers. Our hosts today are NIMSY's Inga Boonen, Chief Growth Officer, and Sarah Hickey, VP of Research.
In one sentence, tell us, what is it that Trados does?
Well, I think at RWS, we unlock global understanding. And really what that means, Inga, is that we're breaking down communication barriers to really make global connection possible. And then within Trados, really, we're empowering the people that actually do that unlocking with our technology.
When you were a kid, did you think that you would become a general manager at a company, or what was the first career that you dreamed of?
No, I did not dream of being a general manager as a kid. I think as a kid, you know, I had a lot of things that I wanted to be, but the one thing that sticks out in my mind is I wanted to be an insurance man. And I know that sounds weird, but the reason for that is because my father was in insurance, and I thought it was really cool. He had this huge desk and this big phone with, you know, kind of punch button numbers. It took up a lot of room, but the coolest thing was we had this huge insurance sign on our lawn. And I thought that was cool for many, many years. I'm not sure how cool that is, but I thought it was cool at the time.
Very nice.
Oh, that's amazing. When you're not working, how do you like to spend your time?
So I have children. I have a 9-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son. I've also now picked up a cat, a bearded dragon, some fish.
Wow. So
I spend a lot of time. Yes, indeed. I spend a lot of time with the kids, and I feel like my wife and I have some of the busiest kids on the planet. But when we're not doing, activities with the kids in the summertime, we love to spend a lot of time up in the Adirondack Park in New York. So we spend a lot of time on the lake doing, you know, water sports, paddle boarding, swimming, that sort of thing. And then in the winter, we try and spend as much time as we can on the slopes. And we just got a fresh snow here. So ski season is officially on.
Oh, that's great.
Wow.
I love skiing.
Very sporty. You're a fit family, mm-hmm. I expect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, indeed.
Do you also get the chance to travel, not for work, because I'm sure that you do that, but for pleasure? And if so, which are the three countries that you would like to visit or maybe you haven't been to yet?
Yeah, so I have definitely traveled plenty for work, and that has picked up in earnest again towards the second half of this calendar year. So I've been fortunate enough to, you know, visit a lot of different countries and cities. But personally, so I am an Anthony Bourdain fan. And my personal travel, like, I've kind of modeled it on, you know, where Bourdain has gone. So, you know, a couple of places that come to mind. There was a show around this time of year, right? Like when it was around the holidays in Vienna, Austria, where they had kind of in the courtyards within the city, they had like this winter festival with these wagons, and they serve like some nice hot cider drinks, some good eats there. And that just looks like, you know, looks like an environment that I could certainly fit into. On the other aspect of that, or the other end of the spectrum there, there was another episode on the coast of Croatia as well, where there was some amazing seafood, some good mulled wine, and actually some really old restaurants that are still, you know, like the structure is still there from, you know, circa 1500s. And then The last one I think would be Beirut in Lebanon. So that was, I don't know if you guys saw that episode, but there was, you know, some fantastic food in the beginning of that episode. And 24 hours later, you know, I mean, Bourdain and the camera crew are like hiding out because there's like bombings going on. So that, I don't know if that's the curious or like wild side, but I would like to check that out. And I think just, you know, kind of the Middle East in general. I haven't spent a ton of time there.
Yeah, Middle Eastern food is so good.
Yeah.
So I get true. That.
And it's dinner time over here, so I am getting hungry thinking.
Yeah, I'm also hungry, actually.
Yeah, so basically, like a really easy rule of thumb is where there is good food or where there's food you're curious about, go there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I make a lot of decisions with my stomach based on food. Yes.
Yes. And when I was in Bangkok, I tried to go to that street food place where Anthony Bourdain also went.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I tried twice. I never found good spots, but I at least made the efforts. My last question for you is, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Okay. I think that definitely comes from my mom. And she said, Mark, you know, everyone puts their pants on the same way, one leg at a time. And, you know, there's some real meaning in that. And what the meaning I take out of that is that there's a human element in everyone. So, you know, whether you're dealing with super senior people in the corporate world or, you know, movie stars, professional athletes, right? Like there's a human underneath all that. And I found where you're able to kind of make that connection, you know, that builds good relationships. So I would say that's the best piece of sound advice. And that comes from my mom.
I love it.
That's really nice. All right, Mark, we get to know you a little bit better now. I feel like I get a good sense of who you are as a person, what you like to do, what you like to eat.
everything.
Yeah, let's move on to the tougher questions, if you're ready.
Yeah, sure, let's go.
Okay, so what would you say was your first breakthrough in your career? Was there a specific moment you can recall?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've had several breakthroughs in my career. And if I kind of think about the common thread through all those breakthroughs, Sarah, it's that I was uncomfortable while I was doing it. And like some of the initial breakthroughs, I would feel uncomfortable during that breakthrough, but I was never comfortable being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But I would say being comfortable being uncomfortable is, you know, where I've gotten to now. And I think that kind of leads to those breakthrough moments. So, you know, for me personally, if I'm not uncomfortable in some way, if I'm not learning, you know, I'm in the wrong spot.
That's a good way to live and to approach your career, definitely. And I agree, it's often those times when we do feel uncomfortable is when we grow. Still, like, when you look back on your career, what was maybe a big challenge that you overcame, or either the biggest or one big challenge you can tell us about, like an obstacle and what you learned from it?
Yeah, that is a good one. There's been lots of challenges, but the people challenges within my career are always the trickiest, you know, and one that's more recent is, How do you bring teams together, right? Bringing people from different kind of backgrounds, different cultures together to function as one team. And you can never underestimate the change management to make that happen. Yeah. So I would say that's one of the biggest challenges, one of the biggest learnings that I've had in my career.
Often as a result of overcoming a challenge, there's lessons there, or maybe sometimes not out of challenges, even success stories. But if you look back on your career to date, what lessons have you learned in your business, in your career so far?
So I think, you know, one of my biggest learnings in my career is just, you know, learn to be yourself. If you're you know, if you're not authentic, that kind of comes through, and that can cost you in a number of ways. And this happened to me kind of earlier in my career, where, you know, you may have a manager, for example, kind of pushing on you, and it doesn't quite compute in your head what they're saying and what they're kind of pushing you to do, but it's got to make sense to you. It's got to come out as you. So I would say the sooner you realize who you are, who your authentic self is, the sooner you're going to kind of realize that superpower. And that's, you know, I would say that's one of my big learnings.
I'm wondering, throughout your career, did you have anybody who you would consider like a mentor, or do you still have one today?
I have several, yes. And yeah? Mentors are super important. You know, I feel like mentors are like a snowball over your career, right? There's people that are really looking out for you that you can have real conversations with and give you kind of critical feedback along the way. I'm a big believer in mentors and mentees. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm actively involved right now with the Women in Localization mentorship program. There's a mentorship program through the Monterey Institute, you know, but it's super important. And yes, I mean, I'm a big believer in mentoring and menteeing as well.
Okay. So looking a little bit on the success side, I feel like it leads us into that direction. You know, so success, I feel like it's a very subjective word, you know, it means many different things to different people. We have generic ideas of it, but what does success mean to you?
Success to me really means kind of enabling the people around you to do, you know, do what they want to do. So for example, you know, I have seen people on the team grow and enable themselves to do things they otherwise couldn't have done when we started working together. So, you know, those might be lifestyle changes, that might just be a way of life, you know, kind of in the same way. For anybody that has kids, right? Like, you want your kids to grow up and you want them to be happy. So that's what I would say. Success, like happiness and success, mm-hmm. are tied at the hip.
Absolutely.
That's kind of how I'd look at it.
That's a very nice way to define it. Looking at more of the business side, what do you feel? Obviously, RWS is a very successful company and Trados is a very successful brand of its own as well. What do you feel like is the secret sauce to the company's success?
I can't tell you that.
It's a secret, like for KFC.
Have you ever seen Kung Fu Panda? The secret sauce is there is no secret sauce. You are the secret sauce.
Nice.
No, I think honestly, it's a people business, Sarah. And mm-hmm. as you go into the business and you kind of peel the layers of the onion back in terms of the people, it's amazing, like the level of experience and talent that the organization has. And I think that's what keeps RWS in the lead. You know, and we'll continue to do so, really, is the people at the heart of that.
Thank you. So it comes back down to the people again. I like that.
It does, yeah.
What do you think, in your perspective, makes you a great leader?
I don't know. I'm not sure that I am, but, you know, I mean, a great leader, really, it's like, it kind of depends on the people that you're leading and what those people think about you. Like, if those that you lead or that, you know, choose to have you as a leader, really is a good way to put it. Think that you're doing a good job. I mean, that's really a good measure there. I mean, I know personally for me, when I look to leaders, I look for people, that I can trust, people that are empathetic, people that, inspire me and like you can have real conversations with.
As a leader as well, how do you make sure your team keeps motivated? Like, how do you motivate your team?
Oh, lots of different ways. Honestly, lots of different ways. And this varies. And I think knowing how to motivate your team really hinges on knowing who your team is and knowing what's important to them. So, you know, for example, you know, this is kind of a stereotype, but if you look at people in the organization that are in a, you know, say they're in a sales role versus an R&D role, the motivators there are very different. So just understanding that and making sure that you're kind of keeping current on that, I think is the best way for, you know, you as a leader of those teams to continually motivate and not make it stale either.
Yeah.
You know, like you need to keep it fresh with the teams.
Mm-hmm. One more question I actually usually ask early on, but I forgot. So aside from profitability, what are the three main things you spend your time on at work?
You're going to notice a theme with me, Sarah.
Yeah.
People.
Okay.
But we have talked about the people, but you can never underestimate the importance or take for granted the importance of the people in the organization. Just super, super important. The other two things I'd say that I spend my time on are growth. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of investment and Trados is really at the beginning of another growth curve. It's sort of like the arrow has been pulled back and mm-hmm. you let go. So we spend a lot of time talking about growth. And also it kind of goes hand in hand with that, but innovation and real innovation, not just iterative innovation, but kind of some bigger innovation that we want to bring to market. We've got some nice innovation budget. And we're basically forcing ourselves to think about innovation. So as opposed to, you know, just kind of going through the day to day, it's like we're hitting pause. We're saying we're going to focus on innovation for a set amount of time throughout the year and, you know, really, really force ourselves to think hard and actually innovate.
All right. My last question, and then you're off the hook. You made it. What advice would you give to young entrepreneurs who are starting their own business in the language industry today?
The advice that I would give is you might not know what you're signing up for, but believe in it, you know, be passionate about it. And that's just, I think that applies beyond just the language industry. For anybody who, you know, is truly good at what they do, they need to believe in it. They need to be passionate about it. So, you know, be passionate. You're going to need to show some grit as well. Like if you're in a startup, you're starting your own business. There's going to be some roller coasters. There's going to be some really high highs and some really low lows. So, you know, be ready for that. And specific to the language industry, I would say, you know, be a sponge. There's a lot of knowledge, that people within the industry have, and they're happy to share. And I've found that, you know, I've found that really valuable and kind of unique to the language industry.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mark. Thank you for joining us in the hot seat. It's cold in New York, so probably you didn't sweat too much.
You warmed me up a bit, Inga.
You did, right?
Thank you.
Good. So if anyone else feels like letting off some steam and you're part of the C-suite at a company in the language services industry, do sign up with us if you dare to come and sit in our hot seat. For the viewers, this was all, folks. Thank you for watching and look out for our next episode that will be published as a video on Multilingual TV and as a podcast on the NIMSY website.